To order today. Hello, Mr. Woolery. Just perfect timing. We'll call the meeting today, October 6th. DFAC meeting today. The first matter of business is that we have a absent chairman, and unfortunately, because of some hurricane going on somewhere, we're absent a vice chairman. So according to the bylaws, Ms. Stafford has told us that we can appoint a temporary chairman from the members. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
So having said that, we'll have a we'll select a chairman for the day. And do we have a nomination for that,
I make a motion that Tom Hammond be the chairman for the day.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor, aye.
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 So it's unanimous. Okay, we are in business. The first order of business today is the approval of the minutes of the July 14th, 2016 PFAC meeting. Do we have comments, additions, subtractions?
If I may interrupt for a moment, before we get started with an agenda item, maybe we would do a roll call of the member. So for the record, we know who is in attendance and who.
Maybe we have a roll call, Ms. Friedenrich. You start.
Present, Friedenrich.
John Moore, present.
Tom Hammond, present.
Carl Groner, present.
Eric Woolery, present.
Michelle Aguirre, present.
Good. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So, the approval of the July 14th minutes. Do we have comments, additions? Those are pretty extensive minutes. Did you? I think you got them right. Okay, do we have a motion for approval?
I'll move approval.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Groner seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Third item of the day is the approval in concept of the issuance of the short-term taxable pension obligation bonds, which we've been through many times. This is to prepay the county's fiscal 2017-18 pension obligation. And we are also deciding whether we should select KNN Public Finance as the advisors, and Orrick, Harrington, and Sutcliffe as a bond counsel. Who do
Chair,
we have?
I have a statement I need to read. The treasurer tax collector shall recuse herself from all matters before the committee where the treasurer tax collector, including any treasury investment pool, is a party to the matter. So I will need to recuse myself from deliberations.
Okay. Any questions about that? All right. So, who do we have here?
Excuse me,
Victoria
I'm sorry.
Ross.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Also, I will be recusing myself in representing PFAC in my role. My colleague, Ronnie McSessay, who has partnered with me in advising public finance for over a year now, will step in the role of advising public finance, and I will move over and assist the treasurer for this transaction only.
Okay. So you're in cahoots with a treasurer.
That's
that
right.
Is everybody done now?
I think we're ready. Now I think we're ready.
Okay. So I'm Victoria Ross. I'm a public finance manager. Believe it or not, it's been a year, and we're back here again with the POBs. So I'll give a brief history, because I know you're all very familiar with these prepayment and the pension obligation bonds. So for the past several years, the county in mid-January has prepaid its contribution in order to receive a discount from OSERS. This year, the OSERS board decided to reduce the discount. So it was reduced to 4.5% from 5.8%. So the county did agree with a reduction.
Wasn't the previous year before that 7 and change?
Yes, it was 7.25.
Right.
3 years ago.
Three years ago. 14-15, it was 7.25. So the final maturity of these bonds would be June of 18. The projected contribution amount would be about $400 million, and the county would save with the discount about $18 million. Treasurer Sherry Friedenrich, who is now in the audience, has willing to purchase the bonds in its entirety, so it'd be considered a private placement, and she would invest that in the extended pool. So doing a private placement saves the county approximately $354,000 in cost of issuance. So just to talk about the treasurer taking these bonds, the financial advisor would review the market at the time of sale and determine what the correct pricing would be so that we would know that we have an arm's length transaction with the treasurer and know that we are paying market. So just to add that as additional information. So the financing team staff, again, is recommending KNN and ORIC for financial advisor and bond counsel, respectively. In April 2013, the contracts were approved by the Board of Supervisors for both financial advisor and bond counsel. KNN and ORIC have general purpose agreements in place allowing them to provide these services. You know, as you're aware, both firms have served on the team for the county's previous pension obligation bonds, and ORIC also completed the validation process. So the estimated compensation for ORIC is $67,500 and KNN $25,000. Their rates have been reduced given the fact that this will be a private placement. And there is no underwriter costs because the treasurer doing a private placement. So we're requesting today approval in concept by PFAC members to allow the financing team to move forward and further analyze the option of issuing short-term POBs. Staff will return to PFAC and the board when details of the financing are determined and documents are substantially final. And once you approve this today, this will go to the board on October 25th. So does anyone have questions?
Just a couple of questions. What do you anticipate today the expectation of the borrowing cost to be?
So all together would be about $95,000.
No. What would be the interest rate?
Oh.
I know this is speculative.
It's like low twos or something.
Hi, it's David Brodsley from KNN Public Finance. Right now, it's probably in the neighborhood of about 1%. It's a spread to Treasuries, so it will be based on what Treasuries are at the day of pricing. But
even with the latest increase in the interest rates in the last few days?
I just double-checked just a second ago. It looks like we're about 10 basis points higher than we were the last time we ran numbers. So the savings we were projecting were about 11.4. It'd bring it down to about 11.2 million, still pretty substantial. Obviously, January is a long way to go, and there's a lot of stuff that's going to happen, but right. We'll revisit it.
In the past, typically, how many tranches have we had in these things?
One, two, three, five has been our typical structure. It's sort of balancing balancing large enough blocks without making it too burdensome on the county to administer. But actually, there's probably more flexibility with the private placement, and we may revisit that depending on both the county's and the treasurer's preferences.
If you don't have an underwriter, what's the methodology of determining the fair market value here for the county?
We'd look at a couple things. We'd look at the historical spreads to treasuries of your bonds. We would also look at other similar securities that are trading either in the primary or the secondary markets and calculate the spreads to treasuries on the date in which we have pricing information. So that's the real key, is determining what your spread's going to be to the treasury, and then you lock it in based on the treasury the day of pricing.
And KNN is going to be the engineer of this methodology?
Yes, and we'll sign a certificate of our opinion that this is a reasonable interest rate or price for the securities.
Is there another county in the state that you compare us to as far as comparable size, credit quality, and what are they currently?
This is a somewhat unique security, I have to say. This is really more like a tax anticipation note from a credit perspective. So, there are a lot of pension obligation bonds out there for highly rated counties, and we would look at the shorter maturities and see how they're trading on the secondary as probably our primary external source of reference.
And are you comfortable with the discount that they've offered us this year? A drop from 5 and change to 4, it seems like pretty drastic.
I'm not sure my comfort is all that relevant. Obviously, from the pension system's perspective, I get where they're coming from, which is that they're assuming the market risk from the prepayment. They don't have a guaranteed actuarial return, which is what they were offering at the beginning of the program. And they've determined that, you know, to them, the value of prepayment isn't the full actuarial rate. Obviously, from the county's perspective, the bigger the discount, the better. In a way that I've sort of not qualified to even opine on that one.
That's why I brought up the third year. It was 7 and change, and now we're down to 4. That's a dramatic difference.
Yes, yeah.
Has there been any pushback from the county asking for a higher rate?
Michelle, do you want? Okay. Members of the committee, Suzanne Lester, CEO, Public Finance. You know, initially when OSERS first approached the county about the reduction from 7.25%, there was some pushback and some discussions about what that discount should be. But as we've seen the end results, year-end results of the OSERS investment portfolio and their interest earnings, it's been below 7.25%. So this is the county believes this is a reasonable rate given what OSERS' actual rate of return has been in the past couple of years. In any year where our discount that we've received is greater than OSERS investment returns, that provides an add to the county's unfunded liability. So it's really in the county and OSERS' best interest to have that actual rate of return and the discount they're offering be closely aligned.
Do you know what their return was last year?
I think it was about 2.84%.
No,
Last year?
As of December?
Yes.
December of 2015, it was 0.09.
For the year?
For the year.
The year? Okay.
That's the actual rate of return?
Yes.
Yeah, because I actually have a concern on this, because looking at the long-term unfunded pension liability or net pension liability, it went up from last year. What was the rate of return projected by OSERS last year? Have we done any analysis on, you know, because the problem I see here is if they don't hit their number, if they hit their number, things are great. We actually have real savings. If they don't hit their number, what happens is that just gets tacked on to the unfunded pension liability, and it just comes around and we have to make up for it later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Michelle Aguirre, so we challenged OSERS both ways, right? So we went from 7.25 to 5.8 to the 4.5. And when they came back with the 4.5, I said, are you sure that, you know, that's not too high for, right, the exact same reasons that you're talking about, Eric? But what Gerard Miller was looking at, their investment officer, is long term. And we did challenge him because of the unfunded liability, and he said, I am comfortable with that number when you look long-term, because it's not just today. So he was comfortable that 4.5% over the long-term, because this is just 1 year. They reevaluate that discount rate each year. So he was comfortable with that, because we don't want to have a negative impact, you know, as it relates to unfunded liability. So we challenged both ways on that number.
So I guess, what is the actual, and what did they project as their rate of return last year? Did they miss their number, or did they hit that rate of return?
Well, that's the 7.25.
Right.
No, discount.
That was
what they
discount.
Actually earned on the.
Right,
on
but
the,
you're saying what their target is.
Yeah,
that's
they
is.
Have a target, and what did they right. actually make on that?
And you said 2.8%, is that right?
Or 0.09?
0.19?
Looks like it was.
I think Sherry would know.
Yeah.
Well, the target is always going to be the actuarial discount rate, and the presumption is not that you'll hit that in any given year, but over the long period of time, you'll have years that are way above, years like last year that are well below, and the goal is to have what would be your 20-year
right.
average.
And I know this has been a good tool in the past, but is it a good tool to do every year with that in mind?
I think Ms. Friedrich can probably answer a couple of questions. What was OSERS?
Certainly, only on behalf of OSERS, because of course, as you know, yeah. I am representing, I represent the county on the OSERS board. So if there are OSERS questions, or certainly on the private placement, you had several questions, I think, on OSERS. And I just want to clarify a couple of things. One is the OSERS board sets a discount rate. We review it every 3 years. We are in that period where we're actually doing our asset allocation and we're reviewing that discount rate. The discount rate is intended to be a long-term perspective, and we've just changed consultants, but our previous consultant who we'd set the current discount rate really looks under a 30-year period. What we then have the actuary do is they go through, they do a sampling of all of the expected rates, they do a wide sample, they come up with what they believe is a good number, and then they look at what our risk tolerance is and our asset management, and then they come up with what they would recommend for the discount rate. So that rate of 7.25 was the rate recommended by our professional in looking at our asset allocation and in looking at what the market perception for those assets was. So that's where that is set, and this year we are re-looking at that again. As was mentioned,
is that shorter than 3 years, though? You said they do it every 3 years. Last year, they took it down to five.
No, that was actually 2 years ago. So we're in the third year where we're reviewing it again. Because when I started, it was at 7.5,
right.
7.75. And then the first year, I know I recommended it go to 7.5 as the actuary recommended. They didn't do that. So then the next year, we went to 7.25, and we phased that in over a two-year period because of some of the significant impacts and the volatility to the plan sponsors. So we are reviewing that this year. There was one other point I did want to make, that we never expect to actually meet 7.25 exactly. We expect, based on looking at the market over a number of years, you're going to be maybe 10%, and you're going to be 6% or 4%, or in this case, we were down to 0.09% last year, and the previous year, we actually had a loss. So the last 2 years have been challenging years, and we are revising our asset allocation this year. We've had our consultant in to look at that so that we can prevent some of that volatility that's affecting us. So if that answers some of the OSERS questions, I'd be more than happy to take any others you've got. Yes, Ms.
Sure. Can I just clarify? So the 7.25% is the assumed rate of return, right? Sometimes also
yes.
referred to as discount rate.
Yes.
So the assumed rate of return is looked at every 3 years. The discount rate associated with the pension
yes.
prepayment is looked
annually.
At annually.
Annually.
Right.
Yes. Good clarification on that. Thank you very much.
So just in answer to the question, last year was a loss, net-net.
Last year was flat. It was 0.09%, so it was essentially break-even. I mean, we made a little bit of money on $12 billion. It still is a bit of money, but it was essentially flat.
Essentially, because they didn't miss the mark, we didn't put the extra money in, then the pension debt has increased.
You know, there's a few
liability.
Factors that go with that. Part of them is the mortality tables are changing. And so I believe that it was significant for the mortality that probably caused the major change in the liability to rise. It was a fairly significant rise, I believe, for the public safety. Mm-hmm. And we are also, that is one of the demographics that we look at when we do this annual three-year review. So we are looking at the mortality rate. I know the last time we looked at it, it also had an impact. But again, they've got new generational tables that they've produced. I think we're on the RP2000. And so we are continuing to look at that. But I believe that mortality was one of the large factors in that. And of course, the pension contribution is actually 18 months behind when you actually get the results. So that 0.09 is not incorporated into the county's contribution until July 1, 18 months hence. So there is a lag time between when the actual results come out and when it actually gets incorporated into the rate. And I see Ms. Aguirre nodding, so she's familiar with that lag time between them. So it does take a while to actually build its way into the actual rates that the county would pay.
So we can expect in 18 months that the discount will go further?
Now, again, the discount rate we're looking at, it's based on what our asset allocation is and really what the expected returns for that. It also includes inflation. So inflation would be a factor of that return. You'd have the real return, and then you have the inflation. So that will determine what the actuary presents to us as his recommendation for the rate.
That's the factual data that goes into it. And certainly the changes in demographics also factor in, because if people are living longer, then in his actuarial calculations, those are going to extend the payments longer. So when you match those up, that's when you come up with that contribution amount. And again, if people are living longer, you expect you're going to have to pay more money this year if they're living longer than last year, if everything else is the same. But in this case, if there were to be a change in the discount rate, that would also, could also, or you know, that portion of it would create an increase in the rate absent anything else. Now, when we reduced the amortization several years ago from 30 years to 20 years, we actually had a savings. So I believe overall the county saw a 0.5% savings in their contribution rate because we were not having to pay interest. So there's a lot of factors that actually go into it, but certainly the discount rate is one of those very important ones, and meeting that is certainly our goal every year, and that is what the board is really looking to do, though we meet it not exactly, but by, you know, hopefully being over every year if we could.
But to Mr. Woolery's point, we're really kind of just moving money around here, because if OSERS determines that they're going to make 4.8 on our money that we prepay, and this year they only made 0.019, and next year, what will happen, there will be an adjustment, and the bill next year, the subsequent years, will go up. I mean, we understand that.
Well, I think one of the key points, if I might, Chair Hammond, is to indicate that the county has an obligation to pay. It's annually. It used to be the ARC, the annual required payments, and there's a new term with the new GASB. So they have to pay a certain amount a year. The code allows for a prepayment. So if the county doesn't do this, they still, every week, every 2 weeks, they would send off those pension contribution payments to OSERS. Because OSERS allows for that prepayment, the board approved for that, OSERS then gets the money in a single chunk instead of periodically through the year, which is kind of like dollar cost averaging. You're diversifying. So if we get the money in on January 16th and the market goes up, which actually it did this past year, it benefited the plan by having the money at that time because you were able to buy low and the market went up. Now, subsequent to that, the market has changed, but you'd really have to look at every time that the market went up to see whether it was better for you to make those payments. But it is difficult to, no one can predict the market. And the other item is if everyone in the OSERS plan did the prepayment, literally the cost is the same because the same people still have to pay the same amount of money, whether it's on a prepayment or not. There are a few plan sponsors that do not use the prepayment because they have cash available. They just choose not to use all of that prepayment. I think OCFA prepays maybe 75%, but they don't actually prepay 100%. So then that, if we don't make the number, that liability is spread out over a period of time. I believe it's 5 years. So you have a little bit of time, but you still end up having to pay that difference. So it gets built into the actuarial contributions regardless.
Well, I understand. But the $18 million that we're saving, is that the number I heard on this, on this thing? I mean, we don't save anything if our pension obligation goes up next year.
Right. By 18 million. Right?
It just gets tacked on to the debt or the
unfunded liability. Right, and the question would be is if you lost money or gained money, again, it is the timing of that market. But it is a valid savings because you just don't know what the market's going to do. If you could predict that the market was going to go down, then yes, it probably wouldn't be a good idea to put $18 million into the market and then the next day have it drop. But you don't know that. And as I say, last year it actually went up on that period, but we're still down because then rates did end up, our yields on the assets we have invested did go down.
But it's a valid savings, but it could also be a valid
unfunded
liability.
No question, it could go
either way. Exactly. It goes either way because they didn't hit their mark this last year, the liability is up.
Well, I think we understand that.
Don't have the benefit because you still end up needing to pay whatever that amount is. So if we lost over $18 million, then you would start having to pay more. But you gained $18 million by using the discount.
That's spaced out over dollar cost averaging, so it gets away from some of the market risk, too.
There are certainly different options to look at as you do that, yes.
Okay. Can I raise one more point, Ms. Friedenrich?
Of course.
So we're going to borrow at 1%, mm-hmm. and we're going to have a savings of an arbitrage of 350 basis points or so. 300 basis points anyway. And the question I have is that the money that comes in to your treasury every month, all year long, there is a, what does a county make on their money that you're holding all the time? In other words, what is the spread that your department makes?
Currently, we invest in very high-quality fixed income. I believe that 99% of our portfolio is in AA and up, and a significant portion is in treasuries and GSEs. As you know, those are, certainly the treasuries are the safest, and GSEs, government-sponsored enterprises, are the second safest. Today, I believe our yield is probably 0.8, 0.75. So right now, we do not usually invest in municipals, which have a higher yield. However, when we do our due diligence, as we would do with the county, like this year, we purchased over 40% of the county's last POB. So we do our due diligence, and if we feel it is certainly warranted for our investors, we would then purchase it, as we did in the open market last year. In this case, we know the county. We've been tracking them. We've owned their POB bonds for the last several years. We believe it's a win-win. It's, you know, we're not going to go out and buy a lot of other municipals. In fact, we're not going to buy probably any. But we know the county. We understand the cash flows. And, you know, we believe that then, since we put it into our extended fund, which doesn't require the rating agencies to rate the debt, we can buy it as private placement debt. That saves all the rating agency costs. Again, we're right here. If we have questions, we make sure as investor.
I got that. But okay. Let me press this point a little bit more.
But we buy lots of GSEs that are over that. I mean, that's a net amount. I mean, we're a very liquid. We're a liquid within
a
year.
You're making 75 basis points. I got that.
Net.
So the next question.
Right.
So the next question is, you have two choices. You can pay $400 million up front and save $18 million. Or you can pay it out every month to OSERS. What is the present value of that money by the payout over 12 months as opposed to up front? In other words, you're making 75 basis points, but there's got to be a present value to the spreading it out over the months. Do you follow my question?
But you're not putting the whole $400 million.
Yeah, I mean, there's a present value to paying $400 million over 12 months.
Right. What we
What's
look at
worth?
Is it's the county's decision to decide to make the prepayment. So the county looks at its, you know, its finances, and certainly they would make that decision whether it's worth it for them to do it. We really have no ability to change. If the county needs to make a disbursement, we build it into our cash flow, and we would make that disbursement.
No.
The
my
question
point
is
that
who's
you
done
would
the
recommend
analysis?
You would recommend to the supervisors that we're making 75 basis points
net. I mean, I may buy things that are, you know, 150 basis points.
Well, you make 75 basis points.
Right.
So now, so the supervisors will now ask you, well, you're spreading out $400 million over 12 months. You're holding cash and investing that. What is that worth? Is that worth another 20, 50 basis points? I mean, there's a value to paying it over time as opposed to paying it up front.
Are you talking about the pension payments themselves?
Yes.
Yeah. That analysis is part of the analysis because the pension payments are also pension note payments are spread over time as well. So they're not biweekly because that one of the it'd be administratively more burdensome. But that's why we have multiple one of the reasons there's multiple tranches is to sort of mirror the cash flow pattern from the normal payment and the debt payment.
No, that's not my question.
Okay.
That's not my question. My question is there's a difference between paying $400 million today or $400 million over 12 months. There's a present value of that.
Right, but what's happening is the county's borrowing the money. The county's going into the market.
Assuming we didn't do the deal. Assuming we didn't do this deal. Assuming we didn't borrow the money.
Okay.
So let's assume you decide you don't want to borrow any money and you want to pay it over 12 months. You're making 75 basis points in your normal investment pool. And now there's a value of $400 million not being paid out on day one and being spread out. What is that value worth? I mean, it's got to be worth something.
Net present value of it.
Isn't that present value of paying $400 million over 12 months?
So you would take it times whatever the yield we expected for the year, and you would present value that back to the first day. You'd have to look at each of those weeks, as was mentioned, and you'd have to calculate that present value for, I think it ends in 6/30/18.
So it would approximate another 75 basis points.
Approximate.
Crudely, it would approximate that. So the question I'm saying is that it seems to me that's an – I'm not saying you should do that, but what I'm saying is that's a reasonable analysis to consider. Don't do this financing and consider the present value of not doing the financing.
Right. Well, you have to remember that I'm a party on the investor side, and so I would look to the finance side to determine whether that is appropriate for them to decide to bond for that money versus just paying it, because they do see our interest rates, they see our forecasts, so I would look to them. I mean, I see where you're coming from, but I have to be careful, because if I step, I have to be careful which shoes I'm stepping into.
I understand. Well, it's an, you know, I think it's a valid point, isn't it, Mr. Woolery?
Yes.
I would
have to look at each tranche, because, of course, if I'm keeping the money, you know, today, again, it would be a shorter interest rate versus longer, so you would have to calculate each of those, and I don't have a calculator on to actually calculate
that. It's easier
to
make an analysis if we know what that is. Right now, we don't know if we don't do
so
that.
If I may interrupt, that I agree, that's an important analysis, and so what we're asking for today is an approval in concept to provide that analysis, and I think when we come back, we will provide that analysis. Historically, if I could just give some historical perspective, this has been a really valuable budget tool for the county to provide savings for the county budget. And in more years than not, the OSER's rate of return has exceeded what the discount was. Admittedly, we are in an environment at the current time where that hasn't always been the case. But we do agree, if you approve in concept the financing today, we will bring back that analysis to you.
Well, I don't think you have to bring it back. I think the point is that that I'm sure that if you did the analysis.
Well, I just did a little back of the thing here. So if you have $400 million, say it's at 1%. Just say 1% is easy. So 1% of $400 million is $4 million.
$4 million.
Okay, so then you take it times 18 months, because you're taking it times a year and a half. So you'd basically, it'd be $6 million in interest versus $18 million in savings.
I understand. I didn't say it would be a better
right,
deal.
But I mean, that would give you a back of the envelope if that's what you're looking for. Yeah. It's not exactly, but that would give you some estimate.
No, I'm not saying it would be
savings. As being a little illusionary when the net pension liability keeps going up.
Right.
You know, so, you know, we get save $18 million.
You don't know that the pension liability is going to go up or down, so it's very difficult.
Well,
you can't
forecast I'm looking at historical, which is last year, and it did go up over $18 million. So,
sure.
You know, if it continues to, it's like kicking the can down the road. We get cash flow savings today, which I understand why this tool's there.
Long-term liability down the road.
But you get the long-term liability. If they're making the number, then I say, yeah, everything's in place. This is a great tool. The question is this a great tool right now based on, you know, the way the market is looking?
And that's a great point, Mr. Woolery. I know that the significant increase in the past year of the UAAL is due to a number of factors, several factors. And so those factors have to be broken into their chunks. Different chunks, and I don't believe that the pension prepayment was the significant factor. There were others,
but
I think
didn't
that's
help.
That's you're absolutely correct.
So, and I don't think we want to do anything that would create more of a liability. At least I don't.
So. Well, I think that our job here is to make recommendations to the Board of Supervisors. I don't think that's what I know we're supposed to do. And I think that calling attention to the supervisors of these particular issues is our job.
Yeah.
And we're very extensive minute takers here. So, and assuming any supervisor ever reads any PFAC minutes, it should be of value, I would think.
Yes, so. That's correct. And you know, we provide briefings to the supervisors as well. And so, you know, we will brief those points. But the question and the request we're making today is for the Public Finance Advisory Committee to recommend staff be allowed to undertake that analysis and come back in December with the financing plan and analysis for your consideration.
Yeah, I think I understand that, and that's correct, and that's what we'll do today. I think that at the preliminary stages where we are today, I think it's most important to flesh this these issues out in the beginning, because when you come back again, your deal is 95% done, and making changes at that time is very difficult.
And I think a reading of the material we've been furnished, one would say we're going to save $18 million on this, and that's not a true statement.
We may or may not.
We may or may not.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, the county saves $18 million in fiscal year 17-18, because you don't have, or 18 million, you don't have that money going out the door to OSERS. So it is an actual savings to the county. So
but
if we did not,
coming in the back door,
well, it's a cash flow savings.
Well, exactly. So in the for 17-18, there's the $18 million savings. So there's, if we didn't do the pension prepayment, then the county would have to come up with that additional money, and so you know there would be negative impact. If you look at, you know, and this is where I said we had challenged OSERS even on that 4.5% number, and because I thought they may have come back with even zero or not offered the prepayment opportunity this year. And they were comfortable with the 4.5%. And when we looked at the long-term numbers, they were still, even with the low rate of return, you know, basically zero last year, over the long term, they were still at the assumed rate of return and were comfortable with that we would, and that we would not have the negative impact on the unfunded liability when you looked at it long term. Because, I mean, Eric, we've talked about this internally, public finance, budget staff, when we talk about the pension prepayment and whether or not we're going to do it, we take that very seriously, because we've been trying to get that unfunded liability down, right? And so to see it go back up, it's disappointing. But as Suzanne mentioned, it's due, and Sherry, it's due to multiple factors. The rate for the retirement rate for public safety went up 6%. We're spreading that over the 3-year period, but that has an impact on the unfunded liability, obviously, and it was because of the mortality rate. So
I'm just suggesting there be some sort of disclosure that we have the information right now. We're saying there's an $18 million savings. However, there's going to be an addition to our unfunded liability of X.
Well, we don't. The problem is we don't know.
Not and for the future.
Right.
For fiscal year ending. Oh. December 31st.
Well,
I think we're
on record. We could always look at the historical, because we do know what happened the previous year.
Yeah.
Correct.
So, I mean, you know, historical performance does help us guide the future.
And OSERS does come and brief the board staff, the executive assistants to the board members. They're briefed each month, and part of that briefing is the status of the actual rate of return. So they are aware and briefed on that.
Right, I think let me just make one point, because I've voiced this before. It is a complex discussion. Absolutely. Because we are not actually on the OSERS board, and I recognize we all as a community have these shared concerns for OSERS. But my concern is I think we're providing advice on the county level.
Right.
And the reason that you'd want a discount closer to the actuarial rate is so it helps our budget. And so we need to be mindful. So if they came back and said, we want to provide zero, I would reject that out of hand. In fact, I've argued we should be getting 7.25, given who we are on this body. And I think there's a very complex relationship with what happens if OSERS got severely underfunded vis-a-vis what the county would do. I think we're not close to there. That's not, but what I'm pointing out is, we are not making decisions on behalf of OSERS. We're making decisions on our advice. Now, we backstop it. There's all sorts of reasons why we are backstopping it ultimately, but really not in that dire circumstance, but in sort of a typical circumstance, we would want, as an advisory committee to the county, to create the most financial flexibility for the county, and we'd want to maximize the discount. And that's been quite, my concern is it's gotten shrunk, and I've been concerned that that's not what other counties are doing. So I think I understand all the arguments why they want a lower number in today's return world. It makes imminent sense to me, but I think we just need to be cognizant that we're here for the County of Orange, and not as board members or as advisory committee to the to OSERS.
Okay, let's just run up and down the aisle. Mr. Moore, any more comments before we call for a vote?
None at this time.
Mr. Croner, any more comments? Mr. Woolery?
Nope.
Michelle? No comments?
And if I could just provide a frame of reference and or just some information of how we're doing in the current year. As of August 2016, the OSERS rate of return is 6.21% year to date.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, so why shouldn't we be getting...
Well, what are we arguing about?
Yeah. Okay. Discount rates, what we're arguing about.
All right. Okay, do we have a motion to approve in concept? We're going to one motion for three things here. We want to approve in concept the issuance of the short-term taxable pension obligation bonds for the year 2017, approve KNN Public Finance as the advisor, and Orrick Harrington Sutcliffe as bond counsel. Do we have a motion?
I'll move it.
Good. Do we have a second? I'll second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
No.
Mr. Woolery votes no. Okay. We did pass with the majority, though. So, okay. Next item on the agenda, Ms. Friedenrich, we need you back here. Yeah. Just a point of information. I am recusing myself on the vote on this Rancho Mission Viejo deal. Simply because of my familiarity with these people and Mr. Moiso and so on and so forth. So we do have a quorum here, so I think we'll be in good shape. So the agenda item is the approval of issuance of Series A special tax bonds in the Community Facilities District number 2016-1. They call it the Village of Ascensia. Would you please proceed?
Good afternoon, members of the Public Finance Advisory Committee. My name is Suzanne Lester, CEO Public Finance Director. Today, CEO Public Finance is requesting your committee's approval and recommendation to issue the Series A special tax bonds for Community Facilities District 2016-1, Village of Ascensia. This is the second phase for the Village of Ascensia. Phase one was issued in October 2015. Just a bit of brief background for any members of the public we may have and for your committee. In November 2004, the Board of Supervisors approved the Ranch Plan Development Agreement between the County of Orange and Rancho Mission Viejo that allows up to 14,000 dwelling units as well as retail, office, and recreation uses. Approximately 7,700 acres of the 15,000 acres will remain open space. As part of the ranch plan development, the developer Rancho Mission Viejo requested the formation of multiple CFDs pursuant to the Mello-Roos Act of 1982 to finance public facilities and improvements that will serve the community. Phase two of Ascensia consists of approximately 199 gross acres, 85 of which will be developed and subject to the special tax. Village of Ascensia is located in unincorporated Orange County, east of San Juan Capistrano, and just south of Ladera Ranch. Phase two is made up of 12 residential projects consisting of 878 for sale units, of which 590 are market rate units and 288 will be age qualified units. The remainder of property is anticipated for parks, recreation, and open space. As you saw in your packet, the merchant builders in phase two are William Lyon, Shea, TriPoint, Rylan, Meritage, Warmington, MBK Homes, Pulte, and Cal Atlantic Group. Six of the neighborhoods are new construction neighborhoods. The other six are continuation phases from Phase 1, Village of Ascensia. On March 22nd, 2016, the Board of Supervisors adopted resolutions to establish the CFD 2016-1, authorize the levy of the special tax with the CFD, and determine necessity to incur bond indebtedness, and called for an election of the landowners within CFD 2016-1.
That would be the merchant builders at that point?
That's correct. At that time, I think Rancho Mission Viejo still owns some of the property. On March 22nd of 2016, that election was held. Landowners voted to approve the issuance of bonds not to exceed $115 million. That was based on a preliminary price point study that was conducted, estimated overlapping debt, interest rate assumptions, and the list of eligible facility costs contained in the district engineer's report. On April 26, 2016, the Board of Supervisors, acting as the legislative body of the district, adopted an ordinance that authorized the levy of a special tax in accordance with the rate and method of apportionment that was approved at the election. Consistent with the County of Orange policy, the county filed a complaint with the Superior Court on May 2nd, 2016, seeking judicial validation of the formation of 2016-1 CFD. On July 22nd, 2016, the court entered a judgment validating actions with respect to the CFD 2016-1 formation, the incurrence of bond indebtedness, and the levy of the special tax. The appeal period for that validation expired August 22nd, 2016, with no appeal filed. On August 11th, members of your committee, Carl Groner, John Moore, and Wallace Rodecker had the opportunity to tour. The committee had the opportunity, but these committee members came to the Village of Ascensia to view the location of the CFD, the building and improvements being constructed, and saw the development that's in progress, the progress that's taken place on the prior phase, 2015-1, including the Canyon House Community Meeting Place. The Ascensia Phase 2 grand opening was held on September 25th, 2016. I understand that approximately 4,000 people visited the community that weekend, visited the models, and toured the community. Now, turning to the proposed bond issuance, the estimated principal amount of the Series A bonds is $93.1 million. The bond proceeds will be used for the construction and acquisition of public facilities and improvements. We'll also fund a cash bond reserve and the cost of forming the CFD and issuing the bonds. The debt service on the bonds is for fixed rate bonds for a 30-year period. And consistent with the prior county CFDs, the bonds are not rated, and it assumes a true interest cost of about 4%. Now, at this time, I'd like to take a moment to discuss the estimated interest rate. All summer, the rates have remained fairly stable, with the cash flow sizing estimate at about 3.9%, and that 3.9% in the cash flow runs that have been distributed by the underwriter, that's included about a 25 basis point cushion in it. The resolution that we originally sent to your committee with your packet had a not to exceed 4% interest rate. Recently, the market has become more volatile to the point where we amended the resolution to a not to exceed a 5.5%, and that was the replacement page that we put into your packet. The 5.5% was also the maximum interest rate parameter that we used for last year's financing. And the actual interest rate, true interest cost in last year's financing was 4.52%. Before we proceed any further in the presentation, I'd like to ask Katie Koster, the senior manager of Piper Jaffray, the underwriter on the transaction, just to come to the podium and give a little bit information about the current market environment.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Katie Koster, Piper Jaffray. As Suzanne stated, pretty much throughout the majority of the summer, we've had a very flat municipal market. In fact, right after the July 4th holiday, July 6th, we reached rates that were really the historic lows that had been tracked for our municipal market. And just to refresh you on how we price these types of transactions, there are really two components that we look at. The MMD index, which is basically an index of current of 20 current AAA rated GO bonds, and then a spread to those rates. Now, when you're looking at a non-rated transaction, that spread to the MMD is going to be wider than if you were comparing that index to, say, a BBB rated transaction or a AA rated transaction. And that spread is based on risk. So if we were to go back and look at the historic lows in July, and at that point in time when we were doing cash flow runs, we were including, as Suzanne had stated, a buffer, because we expect when we're at historic lows that the market really has nowhere to go but up. We included a 25 basis point cushion. But since that time in July, the MMD portion or component of the price has gone up in the 30-year range by 50 basis points. So stripping out that 25 basis points of cushion plus some. On the shorter end, it has not been as dramatic. It's been about a 20 basis point spread, but still certainly eating into those spreads. Now, what has happened is a recent event. We've just started to see the market change over the last couple of weeks, and it's based on a couple of factors. One is the fact that we've seen a lot more stronger U.S. economic data come out. Most recently this week, things like the price point indexes, we've seen the housing market stronger. We've seen some of the construction and sales data for housing come out stronger. We've also seen a tremendous increase in the supply of municipal debt hit the market. And of course, the more supply there is, then there's more for investors to choose from. And that impacts the spread as well. As we've seen the market reach historic lows, the spread to MMD has also compressed. We've had very high municipal bond inflows with, over the past year, lower supply, which has caused that spread to compress. But that has reversed itself over the last couple of weeks. Another very important aspect is as we get closer and closer to the election, there's certainly more volatility in the markets. And we are seeing that play out in that spread component widening as well. So where over the summer we had added a spread component to our numbers of approximately between 80 and 85 basis point spread to that MMD yield on the long end, it's now closer to 100. So, with that said, we asked Suzanne to make the change to the resolution to allow us some headroom, because we don't want to be in the position at pricing to not be able to sign the BPA because we're one or two basis points over that spread. But let me tell you where we think we are today, and we are fairly close to pricing. At this point in time, we expect this transaction, based on current market rates, to yield in 30 years 3.36% with a yield to maturity of 4.2%. Now, the differential there is the fact that we have structured this transaction to have coupons from about 12 years on out at a 5% coupon. The current market for institutional investors, and these are the biggest investors that are out there, and they will be the primary focus of this transaction because of the large size, they're demanding a higher coupon because of the risk of rates going up in the future. And so they're willing today to pay a premium to buy those bonds. However, when we price those bonds, we price them to the call date, which is 10 years out. And so a 5% coupon that yields 3.36 actually has a yield to maturity of 4.2%. But with that said, when we blend it out and we get the TIC, we are today just under that 4% rate. We don't expect it to get up to the 5.5, but again, we want to give ourselves some headroom to take and absorb some of that market volatility that may occur between now and when we expect to price on the 26th of this month. Once we price on the 26th, that risk becomes the underwriter's risk. We lock in the rates for the county, and we expect to close the first part of November.
Does the callable factor of the bonds impact this?
It impacts the yield to maturity, yes, right. It does.
Okay. Questions for Ms. Coster?
Yes. Chair, may I ask
a
question?
Sure, please do.
What would be, if the rate went to 5.5 to our ceiling, what would be the resulting proceeds?
They would be significantly less than they are today. We haven't run those numbers, but the amount that's going into the construction fund is a factor of two things. And right now we have two constraints in the numbers. One of those constraints is value to lien.
So you don't know the number?
I don't know the exact number, but it will be less.
And
it
I know
be
that.
Significantly less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then so how would that gap get filled?
Well, I would expect that that would be filled by the developer would have to have equity put in to finish the project.
And have you had that? Are they ready to do that? Do they have the capacity to do that?
I'm sure they do. I mean, I can, yes, I'm sure they do. We also have, too, as an alternative here, and this runs more to the constraints that I was going to talk to, is an additional bonds test, which does allow us to issue the remaining bonds in the future should we have the revenue available from the special tax stream or the value goes up and we can issue more debt.
Just add to that.
Oh, so it wouldn't go down for sure. You're saying if it got a new value, is that on the real estate level or is that with a different tax facility?
That's the land value level, right. So today,
so that is on the real estate level. Yes. So there actually could be higher proceeds if the interest rate went up.
Well, it's two constraints. It's the revenue
right.
constraint, the money coming in off the special taxes, and it's also the value of the land. So
right
now, we can't go above this $93.1 million because of the land value,
right.
because we have to meet that 3-to-1 test. But we also have the constraint of the revenues, and that's why we're locked into the night. We have to have 110 coverage, and so that's a factor. If rates were to go down and the value of the land were to go up, there's room here to issue the rest of the debt that they need to pay off all the construction costs. Now, we're really close right now. I think the proceeds that they would need to fully cover it is roughly $100 million, so we're only $3 million off. But if we were to go to a 5.5%, again, we would be significantly less, and the developer would have to put in equity to cover those costs.
Do you have a materiality amount? I mean, something?
I would say $8 million, less than what we're showing here, approximately.
Ms. Friedrich?
Thank you, Chair Hammond. Just a couple of questions. And the first one is really on the, you mentioned the premiums. You are, of course, the underwriter, and the underwriter works for your investors,
correct.
Not for the county, because that's why the county has our municipal advisor to make sure that we are structuring the deal that works. So when you pay it a premium or you sell it a premium, it does generally tend to raise that total interest cost because you are paying those higher interest rates. So from a taxpayer percentage perspective, you know, getting that to be more market rates is better because that generally will lower the total interest cost for the deal, especially with any callable bonds. If you're paying 4 or 5% up early and they get called, you've already lost all that interest. So obviously from our perspective, having those rates be really more like market rates is better. Obviously we have to sell the deal, and that is the other issue. I think the other area is when you, and I think I've asked Suzanne this before, and I'm unclear, when you sell at a premium, we're authorized for, or you're looking to authorize for $115 million. Now, that's par value. So even if you sell, when you sell at a premium, you of course get more cash up front in that you have. And in my mind as a taxpayer, if I wanted to issue debt for $100 million,
I'd issue debt for $100 million, I expect to get $100 million. But when you sell it at a premium, you could get proceeds of $105 million. So, you know, one way to look at it is you are actually over that. And I know we've talked about it, and I understand it is on par value. But, you know, that's another reason why I'm not a big fan of issuing a premium. The other question I have is we're right at the, you know, 3-to-1 rate. You know, I just was pricing a deal for a school district yesterday. I think they went out to, 46, so it was a 30-year deal. You know, in looking at, and this was a refunding, so it wasn't it, but, you know, looking at what we think rates in the future are going to go, we are at a high a little bit on rates. I know the county is very conservatively projecting the next 5 years with certainly a possible recession that may come in and looking at those, you know, AVs going down. So if we're at the, really at that limit, is it giving us enough room if we have a recession, even a mild recession, to go through? So that's kind of question one. And question two is, what incentive is there other than the amount for the owner to have to put in if the bonds don't cover all of the infrastructure, for them to make sure that we are getting those lowest costs possible for all of these improvements? Because, you know, as you know, the taxpayer who owns that property is going to be the one paying off that infrastructure over a period of 30 years. And so if values drop, that means their Melrose as a percent goes up, which is this factor we're looking at. But what incentive is there to actually try to lower those costs? Do they go out to competitive bid, you know, to keep those costs as low as possible? I'm just not sure of what they do on that. So those would be my two questions.
It comes out of the builder's profit. Excuse me.
Yeah, no, that's okay. let me try to answer your first question, and then I may turn the.
And I'm not sure if it's you, right? If it's you or
right. But I think on the value to lien, the 3-to-1. First of all, the deal that we did last year was also done at a 3-to-1. Fabulous reception. You know, over 100 investors. In this current market, I don't have any problem with being able to sell that because investors are looking to go down the credit curve a bit to generate some yield. But this developer and the County of Orange has such a great name, and they're so liquid in the environment that investors are all over this particular type of product. So from that standpoint, I'm very comfortable underwriting the credit. From the standpoint of what if there's a recession going forward, you should know that the appraisal, the date of value, incorporated what were, you know, 878 finished lots. There were maybe 60 units that were under construction. Mm-hmm. And since then, you know, construction has been very active. It's a short absorption period. I believe the last absorption is in 2020, which is 3.5 years from now. So every stick that goes in the ground is only going to add to that value and increase the value to lien. So we're very bullish on the credit itself and on the development itself. So, you know, that would be my response to that. I don't know if you want someone else to answer the other question. But.
This is Suzanne Lester, CEO, Public Finance. With regards to costs of construction, there's public works rules of procurement and bidding, and and if I miss anything, I know that Elise Millington from Rancho Mission Viejo, who's here, will come up and assist me. But you know, Rancho Mission Viejo is in this for the long haul. You know, they've got 15 more years at least of this community, and it's in, you know, the best interest of both the county and the developer to develop a strong, successful community. And the county, well, actually CEO Public Finance has hired a district engineer because, you know, when we're looking at paying out bond proceeds for the project, our office doesn't have the construction expertise to evaluate that. So the packages, what they're called, is acquisition packages, where and there's a report where the county is going to acquire this new public facility, goes through not only our district engineer for evaluation, including the public works procurement process and reasonable costs, but our Orange County Public Works is very active in working with the ranch on this process as well, and we receive a sign-off from them as well.
So we are an oversight because you then pay out the proceeds, so you're reviewing those items, and then it would follow normal public works. Now, who leads the construction? That's not the county, or is it our...
There's project, so there's a certain construction that like the roads in the neighborhood, like the the streets, not the major highways. There's certain construction that is completed by Rancho Mission Viejo, in which the county is then acquiring the public facility. And then there are roads like Avenida La Pata that gets a contribution from the CFD, and Cow Camp Road, which are major county roads where the county has led the construction and the management.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Moore?
No, I don't have a question at this time.
Mr. Groner?
No.
Mr. Woolery? Sure. I have some. we have Mission Viejo people here?
We do.
Good. Will you step up, please? Introduce yourself, please.
Elise Smellington, CFO for Rancho Mission Viejo.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I have a question, see if I got this right. I'm looking at the Harris appraisal, and the concluded lot values. This is page 99. It has the concluded lot values. The next attachment D shows what all these merchant builders up front paid for undeveloped lots for, finished. But the question is, what they paid for a finished lot and what the appraisal is probably about 30% less. Can you explain that?
I don't have the appraisal in front of me.
Jim Harris.
Yeah.
I actually think Jim Harris might be the better.
Is Mr. Harris here?
Yes, he is.
Please, come up. Now, if I got this wrong, please tell me.
it reads right to left. Direct
comparison. Just for example, Tri Point has an appraised value, concluded lot value of $350,000, and they paid $318,000 for the lots.
Mr. Chairman, could he introduce himself for the record?
I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you.
My name is Jim Harris. I'm with Harris Realty Appraisal.
Good. Thank you, sir. Anyway, I know this
value. Which product were you talking about?
Well, I'm just looking at page 99 when the appraisal shows the concluded lot values on these lots. And then there's a Schedule D, and it shows all of the lot transactions that the builders bought over the past period of time. And I realize there's a present value of buying unfinished lots and not being able to build on them for a year, however long it took. I have no idea. But, I mean, there's quite a discount about what they paid for the lots as opposed to what your concluded lot value is. And this is important.
I think what he's saying is that, if I might,
sure.
I believe the difference that you're noting is between what they originally paid for the land and what it's worth as of August 1st, which is the date of the appraisal. The difference is that each of the builders in between that time have gone in and they've done additional lot improvements. They've installed their utilities, they've installed interior roads to their entire parcel, and they've started to pour foundations and actually have
stuff. Didn't your company do that?
No, we don't.
So these prices that they paid are for paper lots?
Raw land.
They're unfinished lots?
It's for a blue top finished lot.
Which means asphalt.
It's not asphalt, no. It's a dirt lot, and it's you know, the lots are actually cut, and the streets are rough graded. So what they have to do is come in and put in all of their utilities. We only stub the utilities to their lot, to the outside of their lot. They take it from there.
Okay, I didn't realize that. That wasn't in here. Yeah. So pardon me.
That's part of the definition of blue top and
finish. Well, yeah, well, I didn't. I figured there was just a present value to the difference in prices, but I didn't realize that. I thought these were totally finished.
Yeah.
But they weren't. Okay, thank you. Next question I have, does the Rancho Mission Viejo Company, are they operating, tell me what agreement they're operating with the County of Orange. Do they have a development agreement? Is this part of a master plan, or tell me what the document is that you're operating under here?
Yes, as Suzanne mentioned in her presentation, in November of 2004, the Board of Supervisors approved our development agreement, general plan, and zoning for all of the remaining acreage on the ranch plan. And so that included all of these planning areas, planning area 2 being Ascensia. So that is our governing documents, yes.
And did you have to update it? When was the original development agreement done?
It was approved in November 2004.
Oh, okay. Some time ago. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And according to what I read in here, I believe I read it in the prospectus, if I'm not mistaken, it looks like the Mellow Roos obligations, if you add up the builders, it looks like they pay about 67% of the bills. And so that leaves you with, say, 32%, or the developer has to pay 32% of the Mellow Roos bills until they sell the lots. Is that approximately right?
Based on the amount of time that they, when the actual bonds are sold, when the land is sold to the developer, and then as the units are absorbed over time, that's probably correct.
Isn't a lot of your land exempt from Mellow Roos, though, the Rancho Mission Viejo?
The only land that's exempt is usually land that's set aside for either schools or parks or other recreational uses or public roads or... Right. Yes.
Well, in under here, under special risks, I can find it. Essentially, it said it gave a detail of the percentages of the Mellow Roos obligations that were picked up by the merchant builders.
Mm-hmm.
And that added up to about 67%.
Yes.
Does that sound right?
It does. So based on the amount of time that they own the property versus us owning the property, that is, I would say that's about right.
So then that says that the developer has to pay 32% of the bills until they...
Until they
the
sell
property,
their lots,
right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And I do appreciate the fact that they did include the financial statements of Rancho Mission Viejo. Remember that we've been through that one before?
Yes, and I do remember.
It's at the very last page. It's at the very last page of the prospectus.
But it's there.
It's there. It's there. And we appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Is CFD 2015-1 sold out?
No, of the approximately 840 units, we are about almost 60% sold or reserved.
Okay.
Was a larger number of that from your open house?
Phase one actually opened a year ago, so it's been over the course of the year, yes.
And, but all the lots are sold to merchant builders.
That's correct.
So the developer's off the bill on the Miller
right.
for phase one. Is that correct?
For the lots that they've sold.
For the lots.
For the lots they have remaining, about 40%, 42%, they are still paying the tax on those.
Okay. Of the $90 million or so that is going to come in for this, how much of the bond funds are going to be reimbursement for money you've already spent in infrastructure?
I believe approximately 40% of that $100 million ends up coming back to Rancho Mission Viejo, and of that, probably most of it's already been spent. So, yeah.
Okay. So, you, okay. And okay. Other questions, Mr. Woolery?
I have a comment.
Sure.
I was at the tour, and I just wanted to congratulate you guys on putting together a very nice tour, both Mission Viejo and Orange County staff. I know not only I, but everyone on the tour, it was very well received. We the project is very impressive, and we just want to thank you for putting that fantastic tour together.
We were happy to have you out. Thank you.
Okay, do we have any other conversation, or are we ready for a vote?
I have a question.
Sir.
Under Empire Economics, are they here?
Yes, they are. I'd like to invite Dr. Joe Jancig to the podium from Empire Economics.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Probably need your handout. It's attachment E. Do you have that today?
Is that the price point study? Let's see.
No, it's the market absorption study.
Okay.
65 of 65.
Right.
Oh, I have it. I'll take this one.
On page 11.
Yes.
On the second bulleted point, age qualified 55 plus, do you see that?
Yes.
The statement that you put on that one and on the one at the bottom is burden is not expected to amount to about 181. And the others, you tell us what it's going to amount to. This one, I don't know what it's going to amount to.
Okay, so the bullet point, the second one.
Yes.
The overall average for that market segment and those product types is 1.81.
Correct.
And then on the bottom, there's a range because there's several different projects in that market segment in that product type.
But it says they're not expected to be around. Look at the bottom.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was a change that I missed. The original concept was that the price burden for the age, the tax burden for the age qualified would not exceed 1.8%.
Right.
What happened was when we did that study and we did that analysis in November of 2015, then just recently we took a look at what was happening to the actual prices for those products because they had been on the marketplace. And we typically review that before the bonds are sold.
Right.
So we found that the prices of some of those products actually declined from last November. So I should have removed that word not.
Right. And that's what I thought.
What will be now higher than the 1.80.
And I think it's the same problem on the one above that I mentioned.
Okay. I'll take care of that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions? Are we ready for a vote? Do we have a motion to approve this thing?
So moved.
Series A Special Tax Bond 2016-1, the Village of Estancia. We have a motion by Mr. Moore. We have a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Friedrich. All in favor?
Aye.
Hammond is abstained. Okay. All right. Do we have any comments from the public? Any other comments anybody would like to make? If so, this meeting is adjourned.
And before we adjourn the meeting, if I may interrupt a moment, I just wanted to just discuss an administrative item. We were notified by the clerk of the board that it's time for the committee to do its required ethics training.
Yeah.
And so,
can we just do it?
Sounds so enthusiastic. So that training can be done online, and we have an instruction sheet that Sarah will hand out to you, and it's highlighted where to access that. And so that training needs to be completed online by December 31st. And so if you print out your certificate and then forward it to me, and we'll provide it to the clerk and for our records. Now, I know Mr. Woolery and Ms. Friedenrich probably do ethics training as part of their position. So if we'll get in touch with your staff and obtain a copy of your certificate for our records. So you can expect that probably within
by probably sometime in mid-November, we're going to start reaching out and saying, how's that ethics training going?
You may nag us anytime.
So, Sarah, when we adjourn the meeting, she'll provide you each with the instructions for that training. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.
Nice meeting, Tom.